You are about to experience the most unbelievable week in America ever, Jamie Dimon warned his J.P. Morgan Chase team one autumn morning in 2008. Within days, century-old institutions would vanish, the government would seize control of the world's largest insurance company, and the entire financial system would teeter on collapse. This wasn't just another market correction, it was financial Armageddon. The interconnected house of cards built over decades through deregulation, excessive leverage, and financial innovation had finally begun to collapse, threatening not just Wall Street bonuses, but the entire global economy. What began as a subprime mortgage crisis had metastasized into something far more dangerous, exposing how thoroughly intertwined our financial institutions had become. When one domino fell, it threatened to take down the entire system. How does a thriving financial system collapse in just 18 months? The answer lies in a toxic combination of hubris, leverage, and complexity. Investment banks operated at dangerous 32-to-1 leverage ratios, holding just $1 in capital for every $32 they lent or invested. This approach generated enormous profits during booms, but proved catastrophically fragile when markets turned. At the center stood Richard Dick, Lehman Brothers' intimidating CEO known as the Gorilla. His fierce loyalty was legendary. He once screamed, "Eat shit and die," at someone who mocked an asthmatic child during a company hike. Under Fold, Lehman expanded aggressively into commercial real estate and subprime mortgages, driving record profits, but ultimately threatening the firm's survival. By March 2008, as Bear Stearns collapsed, Fold rushed back from India after Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson warned that Bear would be bankrupt or sold imminently. Arriving at headquarters, Fold discovered futures markets predicting a 21% drop in Lehman shares before markets opened. The warning signs were clear, but would anyone heed them? Henry Hank Paulson never wanted to be Treasury Secretary. He had already held what he considered the best job in the world, CEO of Goldman Sachs. When approached in 2006, he declined twice before accepting, divesting his 3.23 million Goldman shares worth $485 million. By March 2008, Paulson was managing the Bear Stearns crisis. When Jamie Dimon called to inform him J.P. Morgan was raising its offer from $2 to $10 per share, Paulson exclaimed, "That makes me want to vomit." He had privately instructed Dimon to pay only something nominal, as he believed Bear was worthless without government support. The Bear Stearns rescue became politically divisive. Democrats criticized the bailout as a failure of Republican deregulation, while conservatives argued markets should handle failures without intervention. Paulson believed he had saved the American economy, though President Bush worried privately, asking, "We're going to get killed on this, aren't we?" What's worse than being blamed for a bailout? Perhaps being blamed for not providing one when truly needed. While Lehman dominated headlines, a larger disaster was brewing at American International Group, AIG. What began in Shanghai in 1919 had grown into an $80 billion global giant with over $1 trillion in assets by 2008. AIG Financial Products operated like a hedge fund from a Manhattan office. After CEO Maurice Hank Greenberg's 2005 departure, Joseph Cassano pushed AIG deeper into writing credit default swaps, essentially insurance policies on complex financial instruments. By 2008, AIG had insured $500 billion in assets, including $61 billion in subprime mortgages, mostly for European banks seeking to bypass regulatory debt limits. When Goldman Sachs demanded billions in additional collateral, Cassano publicly dismissed the request. "We say to them, 'We don't agree with your numbers.' And they go, 'Oh.'" Privately, he fumed about Goldman's presumed expertise. By September 2008, AIG faced imminent credit rating downgrades that would trigger massive collateral calls, $10.5 billion for a one-notch downgrade, $13.3 billion for downgrades from both major agencies. The company was quietly running out of cash and time. By Thursday, September 11, 2008, Lehman Brothers was in free fall. Treasury Secretary Paulson gathered Wall Street's top executives at the Federal Reserve with a clear message: there is no political will for a federal bailout. Unlike Bear Stearns, Lehman would receive no government rescue. Two potential buyers emerged: Bank of America, which demanded government absorption of $40 billion in toxic assets, and Barclays, which needed 30 to 60 days for shareholder approval. Meanwhile, Merrill Lynch CEO John Thain, fearing his firm might be next, negotiated with Bank of America's Lewis for a complete acquisition rather than his initially proposed partial stake. By Saturday, both Lehman deals collapsed. The British Financial Services Authority refused to waive Barclays' shareholder approval requirements. When Paulson pressed British Chancellor Darling about this, Darling asked about bankruptcy contingency plans, noting implications for Britain. A stunned Paulson told Geithner that Darling didn't want to import our cancer. Geithner responded, "Why didn't we know this earlier? This is fucking crazy." On Sunday, September 14th, Lehman Brothers filed the largest bankruptcy in American history. As panic spread through the financial system, Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs became bank holding companies, gaining Federal Reserve access while accepting stricter capital requirements. Despite earlier resistance to bailouts, Paulson recognized AIG's failure could trigger global panic. The government provided an $85 billion rescue package for a 79.9% ownership stake with harsh terms: LIBOR plus 8.5 percentage points, all assets as collateral, and government veto power over dividends. Paulson then developed the Troubled Asset Relief Program, TARP, initially to purchase illiquid assets weighing down our financial system. The $700 billion price tag was essentially fabricated by Neel Kashkari to justify the largest amount Congress might approve. By October, Paulson shifted to direct bank investments. He summoned CEOs of America's nine largest financial institutions and mandated their participation in the $250 billion capital injection program. Despite protests, Wells Fargo's CEO called it un-American. All nine CEOs accepted government capital in what one Treasury official called crossing the Rubicon. The financial crisis fundamentally transformed Wall Street. The Big Five investment banks disappeared in their original form. Mortgage giants and AIG fell under government control, and the Treasury became part owner of America's largest financial institutions. Yet the disconnect between Wall Street and Main Street widened. While unemployment approached 10% in 2009, banks quickly returned to profitability. Goldman Sachs reported record $13.4 billion profits and paid $498,000 per employee in bonuses. Firms rushed to repay TARP funds to escape compensation restrictions. Finance, designed to support the broader economy, became self-serving, generating fees rather than serving clients. Most concerning is that Wall Street's ego remains intact. Survivors feel invulnerable rather than humbled. The crisis exposed both systemic and human weaknesses: hubris, short-sightedness, and the struggle between profit and prudence. As Warren Buffett observed, when there's a mass delusion, you can say everybody is to blame. Until we address financial culture issues, excessive risk-taking, misaligned incentives, and the too-big-to-fail mentality, we remain vulnerable. The question isn't if another crisis will come, but when.